So first, just a note in terms of the Sfarim. Well, first technical. Hopefully everyone has the schedule. I'm going to try to stick to that schedule, even if it means speeding a little, in order to finish off Sevelis by the end of the year. If you don't have the schedule, then just ask me, I'll give you a copy. In terms of Sfarim, you might have noticed at the very beginning of the tour here, he said the Rishonim are going to be a little different this time around. The two main Rishonim for all of Hilchos Avelos are, which I think was right there in the Torah, the Ramban's Torah Sa'adam. The Ramban is a book, Torah Sa'adam, which is basically about death, more or less, which is the basis of everything. We didn't have tons of Rambans in Hilchos Nida, but the Ramban and the Rush in Moed Katan, the Rush is exceedingly lengthy and in-depth in the third track of Moed Katan, which has Hilchos Avelos. So basically, like, you know, the vast majority of all the Rishonim will be the Ramban's Torah Sa'adam and the Rush in Moed Katan, and then, of course, lots of other regular Rishonim that we'll encounter. In terms of, you know, Torah and Shulchan Aruch, it's basically the same people on the page, more or less. In terms of modern-day Sfarim, if you want a Badei Shulchan equivalent, you know, just, you know, you look up any Sif to see what all the Achronim say. There are two options. There actually is a Badei Shulchan. Two volumes of Avelis. There's also something called Tiberi Sofrim, which is a similar idea. You know, they're both fairly encyclopedic. In terms of Psak Halacha L'maisa, the Minig Eretz Yisrael is very, very much follows Rav Tukhachinsky. Rav Tukhachinsky wrote a sefer called Gesher Chaim. It's technically three volumes, but it's two. One is Aleph, and the other is volume Beis Gimel. I've never seen Beis Gimel separately. 40 years ago, there was such a thing. Anyway, Rav Tukhachinsky's Gesher Chaim, it is in three halakim. Chelik Aleph is Halacha L'maisa, and Beis and Gimel are like Lundus and or more Be'ion and philosophy. Minig Eretz Yisrael and a lot of other places almost always follows Rav Tukhachinsky's Machria in the Gesher Chaim. If you want, a lot of things that represent Minig of America nowadays, you know, the Art Scroll book generally corresponds, Morning Halacha, even though it's just a translation of Pnei Baruch, often covers a lot of the Minhagim in America. You know, I'll summarize things as we go through. Okay, today we're not actually going to start with Avelos, but it's in the same general section, and it is very important halachos, and especially for rabbis, and secondarily for Jews. Hilchas Bikur Cholim. We'll start with Shin Lamed Hei. And Hilchas Bikur Cholim is very, very halacha l'maisa, even though some of the details are different nowadays, but the principles are very crucial. So we'll start from Shin Lamed Hei. Mitzvah Levakir Cholim. Okay. Hakrovim v'achavirim nechnas v'yad v'rachok machu gimel yamim v'yim kafet tolav v'choli eil v'eilu nechnasim mi'yad. Okay, so if someone's a little sick, regular sick, then the Krovim and Chaveirim come right away, and other people not till 3 days. But they all of a sudden have an emergency, and everyone comes right away. The principle, the reason for this is, the Taz quotes from the Bach, because, you know, if he's a little sick and the whole world comes right away, then it makes him out to be sicker than he is. You know, on the one hand, you don't want to ignore the fellow's sickness. On the other hand, you don't want to exaggerate the fellow's sickness. And therefore, you know, if he's just like Stam, not feeling well, then you don't exaggerate the sickness. Okay, we don't necessarily have to stick to this very, very rigid definition all the time. Sometimes it all depends, also depends on the circumstances. But I think it is an important principle not to exaggerate someone's sickness. The, you know, number one, psychologically, that's not necessarily good for him. And number two, the Bach says it could be, in some metaphysical sense, cause weakness to his mazel base. Doesn't mean everyone has to go to everyone many times a day, but it means when appropriate, right? When socially appropriate and expected, then even if you're greater than someone, you shouldn't. You should still go visit them. And even if it's more than once a day, Afilo ben Gilo, even ben Gilo. What is ben Gilo? The Gemara says something unique about ben Gilo, that a ben Gilo takes away a 60th of the guy's illness. What is this ben Gilo? So this is a big machlok Rishonim. The Mechaber here, by saying afilu ben gilo, is assuming that ben gilo means the same thing constellation. the same astronomical constellation, and it's something mystical going on here that when someone of the same astronomical constellation comes to visit someone, since he's coming from the same, coming from the same roots, he takes a 60th of the chol upon himself, and then there's a big chiddush here, that's why it's a filu, which is that even though he takes a 60th upon himself in some mystical way, and he ends up a little sick, he should still come and end up a little sick in order to make his friend better. That's a big chiddush. Not everyone interprets the Ben Gilo this way. The Meiri says a very rational explanation. Meiri right there on the Gemara. I think the Meiri's in the Dorim. I don't know if I... This appears twice in Shas. Anyway, I think the Meiri's in the Dorim. He says, no, Ben Gilo doesn't mean astrological constellation. Ben Gilo means what we call Gil age. Means someone from his chevra. What happens? Because when your chevra comes to visit you, they cheer you up so much that it takes away the 60th of your illness. And that's a more posh way of understanding Ben Gilo than it would be a filu. But it would be Ben Gilo if you're in someone's chevra and their age and can relate to them, then it's more important for you to visit because you can really cheer them up better. Okay, very important, not to be on triach. Yesh Omrim says, Dharma desoni yachal avakir chole, velo nirali, machloks in the maril and him, right? Whether an enemy could go to bikir cholem, el lo yivakir chole, lo yinachim avel, shusono, shlo yechshev, shesamach leido, ve'ein olo, el atzar, kein nirali. Okay, the maril says an enemy can do bikir cholem, the Rama says an enemy should do neither bikir cholem nor nichum avelim, because the person might get the wrong impression and think that you are there to gloat, and therefore it can cause all kinds of unpleasantness. The Shach quotes in the Bach that to go to the Levai of an enemy is for sure okay, because then there's more of an aura of seriousness that, you know, everyone's going to die, and you realize you're all mortal, and also I guess there's less of an enemy once the fellow passed away. Right, so, but nonetheless, the principle at the end says, "Akol fimashehu hasinol fimashe masonim." You have to use your sound judgment to know when it would be appropriate, when it would be inappropriate.
This is going to your enemy's funeral or to enemy.
So again, there are ma asers visiting your enemy when he's sick, or going to your enemy when your enemy's sitting shiva. And the Bach says, but if your enemy died, you can for sure go.
And if your enemy is having his family members levaya,
if you don't go near your enemy, that's fine. But to go visit him afterwards, you know the family members will buy it. It's probably a big crowd, and you don't have to see him. Okay, but in any case, you have to use your practical judgment. The Gemara says you shouldn't visit. Oh, sorry, Gimel. That's what I meant. If you beaker cholim, you shouldn't sit on a chair, a bed, chair, or stool. Rather, you should sit on the ground with ituf, with a kerchief on your head, because the shechina accompanies a chole, and therefore you should have awe of the shechina. Yeah.
Does the ituf apply to us?
Okay, so does the ituf apply to us? The ituf, I mean, everything in the Shulchan Aruch applies to us. The question is just how it applies to us. So the Tzitz Eliezer has a very, very important essay. It's in the back of, I forget which volume. You know, the Tzitz Eliezer was the Rav of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. So in the back of what, forget which volume number, it's something called Ramat Rachel, which summarized a lot of halachos of Bikur Cholim and etc. And in that, the Tzitz Eliezer says, of course, Ituf applies to us, but it doesn't mean literally you have to wear a kerchief on your head. He says either it means you have to wear a kippah, or maybe it means that you have to wear mechubed clothing and not sweatpants. So I think that Lamaisa, as long as someone's wearing a kippah, they could be Yotze Ituf through there. But Lamahadrin, you don't have to put on a kerchief. That would just look weird and everyone would laugh and think you were strange. But if you, wear nice clothes, then that's a way of showing just like you were a shul, then just like, everyone's different, but I wouldn't show up to shul in sweatpants and a t-shirt. Okay, so the Lamahadrin, go to Bikur Cholim, don't wear sweatpants and a t-shirt, wear decent clothing. But if you just wear kippah, you can be Yotze. Those are the 2 days that Tzitz Eliezer has, either kippah or to wear decent clothing. But I wouldn't put a kerchief over my head because that would just look weird.
So a woman then has only one option of wearing the kippah clothing if she's going to do it? If she's being Isn't that the whole point, though?
If she's going to do Bikur Cholim and she wears a kerchief over her head all the time?
No, that she should wear Mechobit clothing. If that's
her okay, yeah, so she should probably wear Mechobit clothing, right? Okay. Okay, now, how about not sitting on a chair? Right, we don't practice that, and the Rambam explains why. That's all the Rishonim Chenogim. Right, this Isser, sitting on a chair, is only if the Chol is on the ground, because it shouldn't be higher than the Shechina. But since nowadays the Chol is always on a bed, so you can sit on a chair because you're not being higher than the Shechina, it's not disrespectful.
And we don't inspire the person that the Chavar argues on
that? I'm not an expert in Sephardim and Hagim, but I've seen Sephardim being Mevakar Cholim, and they seem to follow the Rambam as well. So the Gemara doesn't give the reasoning. Gemara says, "Ein v'akon cholub gimel shalos rishonos v'gimel shalos achronos." But the mechaber here brings the reason of most rishonim. Ein v'akon cholub gimel shalos rishonos shal yom. They should call cholam mekel of cholim abokur lo yachus v'akstol rachman lo gimel shalos achronos shal yom shaz machlo of cholim yisyash v'levakish alav rachman. Right. This is, if I recall correct, yeah. No, because it's only disrespectful if you're sitting higher than the Shechina, not if you're standing. You know, standing is always respectful. What was I going to say? Okay, here it's a bit of a machlokas. Why? The Rambam says, because those hours are when they're taking care of the chol and don't and shouldn't be disturbed. Right? Like, you can't walk in when they're doing the blood test, when they're feeding, etc., because you don't want to disturb them when they're doing their job. But most Rishonim say no. It's because of tefillah. Because in the morning, he looks so good, you won't daven with your full heart. And in the evening, he looks so bad that you'll give up and you won't daven. Rather, you go in the middle of the day when he looks in between, and then you say, well, in between. You go one way or the other. I better daven really hard. The implicate. Now, Lemaisa, we're not so makbid on this nowadays. We're not makpid nowadays to not go in the first 3 hours, not go in the last 3 hours. Why are we not makpid nowadays? The Tzitz Eliezer brings down four answers to why we're not makpid on this nowadays. The Chida says, because we hold like the Rambam, that it's really just the times when they would do when the doctors and nurses would take care of him. And even nowadays, we don't go when the nurse says that she's been, doctor and nurse says they're busy taking care of him. Shevet Yehuda says, because nowadays we're makabel on ourselves that we'll daven hard anyway. And therefore we don't have to be makabel. It's a little funny because we're not so good at davening nowadays. But the Orcha Shulchan says, this is an Eitz Tova, not a Chiv Gomer. And therefore we're not so makabel. And then you combine this with what the Chavetz Chaim writes in Avos Chesed. He says, no, this means if it's convenient for you. But since nowadays we have work all day and it's not convenient for us to always schedule our visits around the first 3 and last 3 hours, therefore we go and we have a chance because, we sometimes have work or other school or other obligations. Okay, so four explanations why we're not makbid. Either we're better at davening, that we're makabel to daven better nowadays, it's tricky, or we follow the Rambam against the Shulchan Aruch, and we don't go when the nurses say that they should, that they're busy, or because it's just an Eitz Tova. Or because this is only if you have nothing else in your schedule, and nowadays we have busy schedules.
It's really the last trap. Like, if he's talking to somebody who's shown that it's not good for the whole world, so why is it, if it's not convenient for you, so just don't do the mitzvah, why should you doubt?
No, that's if you hold like the Rambam, that's because of the chola, then it's no problem. Then we do keep the Rambam, except it has nothing to do with hours anymore. It has to do with when the doctors are there. Right? So according to the Rambam, we do keep this minhag. We do keep this din. Just it doesn't depend on hours. It depends on the doctor's schedule and the nurse's schedule. According to the other Rishonim, we don't keep this minhag. Why? Either because we daven well or because it's not binding. It's only an extra zahiras, or because we have busy schedules. Okay, but Lamaisa, we're not so makar on it. However, the principle of the Ramban is Madaik is of crucial importance. The Ramban says, what's the principle, Madaik, from this? Kol shebikar v'lubikar v'rachlokim etzom. We see from here that davening is an important part of Bikar Cholim. The whole schedule of Bikar Cholim is around davening, even if now they're not makar on those hours. But we're makar on the Yesod. The Yesod that davening is of crucial importance. And here we see that an ikar part of the mitzvah of Bikar Cholim is davening. Not like many people think that it's just to cheer him up. No, an ikar part of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is the daven for him, because after all, we really believe that one of the most important ways to help someone is to daven for them because Hashem runs the world. And therefore, that is of crucial importance. Lemaisa, give me a second. Okay, the Poskim write that there are three reasons why we do Bikur Cholim. Let's just point it out. One reason is this Ramah right here, Kol She Bikur V'lo Bikur Shel Avrachim Lo Kiyam HaMitzvah. Right? You have to daven for the Chola. A second reason is mentioned in Sif Ches at the end, right? Sholem v'dorshim bo and tzrichim l'chabi l'rabis l'fanim k'yotzei bo v'shom and tzarem v'akshul l'rachim. Okay, there it summarizes both of them. Great. Right? That we ask for his health and see if he needs to sweep or wash, or not exactly, something like washing the floor in front of him. Right? Basically, we see that he needs to be taken care of. This based on the Gemara, there was a certain Talmud who was sick. Rabbi Akiva came to visit him. And when Rabbi Akiva came to visit him, he saw that the hygiene was not proper. They didn't sweep the floor and they didn't really, I don't know what the word is in English because we don't have dirt floors. They would like sprinkle a little water on the floor to pack the dust down so that the dust wouldn't rise up because that was very dangerous for the chola. And Rabbi Akiva came and he got them to pay more attention to the hygiene of the chola and he saved his life. So we see the Shulchan Aruch here mentions two reasons for Bikur Cholim. Number one, to save his life through davening, through metaphysical intervention, and through physical intervention, to see if his needs are being properly taken care of. There's a third reason as well. If you notice in the Beis Yosef, when he quoted the Ramban, I think it was, he says, "Sheyimtza nachas ruach b'chaveirav," that it makes him feel better, cheers him up. That's the reason that sort of we all think. Right, it cheers him up because when you spend time with him, it puts him in a better frame of mind. And of course, cheering him up is not only chesed that makes him feel better, but any doctor will tell you that it increases his odds of survival and recovery because of the mind-body connection. So those are the three reasons for Bikur Cholim, the two in the Shulchan Aruch here, making sure his physical needs are taken care of, and davening for him, and just cheering him up by spending time with him if you're someone who he likes to spend time with, which... Well, we should all try to be people who everyone likes to spend time with. I'll make a side point. There's a famous Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe, because Moshe is asked, could you do Bikur Cholim through a telephone call? And Rav Moshe said that through a telephone call, you're only partially mekayim these things. Because you can't really check to make sure that everything's good. You can ask, like, you've been treated okay, are they doing everything, but you can't really see. So you can do a little, but not really. You could cheer them up a little, but not as much as if you visited. And, or Moshe focuses more on the seeing his needs than davening. And you could daven for him after you call him, but you won't daven as well. Because if you see with your own eyes how sick he is, then you'll daven better. So Moshe says, a telephone call is a partial kiyum of these in Yanim. The Tzitz Eliezer thinks maybe it's also partial kiyum. He thinks maybe it's more of a closer to a full kiyum. Halachal Maisa Pastans Rav Moshe, a telephone call partially is Mekayim these in Yanim and partially not. And therefore, he says, if you can visit, you should visit and not just call. But if you can't visit, it's still a mitzvah to call and not do nothing. So it's like a half kiyum, and therefore, it's better to visit. But if you can't visit, better to call. That's what we accept Halachal Maisa Beisim Saka Rav Moshe. One thing I'll point out, very important, that people who have not been in hospitals a lot might not realize is how do these three factors apply to us? So number one, cheering him up, the factor mentioned by the Ramban, not in the Shulchan Aruch, that applies to us. Everyone knows, you go, your friend's sick, you cheer him up. How about davening? Of course, davening also applies to us, right? Hashem elokeinu kol karinu we love. In all times and places, davening always works. You have to do it, but that applies. How about checking on his needs?
It sounds like there's an Indian dafka, like when you see his...
Yes, because you daven for something, because it's more real for you if you see it. If I were to tell you, oh, there's some guy like 6,000 miles away and whatever, and daven for him, like you might, they do experiments like this, but like your heart won't be in it because you didn't see it with your own eyes. Everyone knows you see with your own eyes, you daven better.
But it sounds like to be a kindness, like you should maybe like
right when you leave, you should like say some tehillim as opposed to just like waiting.
Or even while you're there. Or even while you're there, right? In
the
Hanani.
Wasn't part of the idea that he does right there?
Yeah.
Meaning like, it's your A.
Although the post can only write that makes a difference for language. They don't write that you must stop him where the Shekhinah is.
No, but meaning, doesn't that just show you the greater efficacy of prayer while you're there?
Yes. Okay. Although, I don't think that's black and white in the poskim, but it's a good svara. Anyway, one thing I want to point out of crucial, crucial importance nowadays, especially for rabbis, how about taking care of needs? Someone naively might think that that din doesn't apply nowadays. Cheering up, yes. Davening, yes. Because cheering up, the doctors and nurses are not going to cheer them up. And the doctors and nurses are not going to daven. Okay, in Shari Tzedek, there's a few tzaddikim doctors who got to take your name and your mother's name and daven for you. That's not most hospitals in the world. But how about taking care of their needs? What taking care of their needs? But I'm going to go and tell the nurse to wash the floor. I'm going to go and, like the chavi le rabbis, I'm going to go tell the doctor what medicine to prescribe. Like, I'm not going to, I go visit someone in the hospital. I can't see if their needs are taken care of, or I can't see if they need to take, maybe if I'm like, they're a close relative and I'm mamish holding in it, I could like tell the nurse to do something. But usually when you go to pick a hole in the hospital, you can't like, check that their needs are taken care of because the hospital runs the way it runs and you don't know all the pirtei pratim, so you might naively think that doesn't apply nowadays. But in fact, adraba va'adraba. Why was Rabbi Akiva so effective at taking care of this guy's needs? Well, because if Rabbi Akiva came to visit him, then you got to take care of him. He's a VIP, right? If Rabbi Akiva came to visit one of your patients, you would give him VIP status from then on. Right? So in hospitals nowadays, theoretically, they should give everyone equal care with Messiah's Nefesh 100%. But in the real world, their resources are limited, and they're only human beings. And often in hospitals, they cut corners, and they don't give everyone equal attention. So how do they decide how much attention to give each chol and how well to take care of them? So everyone knows by
visitors.
By the visitors. If no one comes to visit someone, then no one cares about them. So unless they happen to be a big tzaddik there, no one takes care of them so well. If a lot of chashiv people come to visit someone, then they know they're very chashiv, and they take care of them better. Number one, just psychologically, you know, if a lot of people come to visit someone, then they think that they're important and they take care of them. And also, just shalom l'shma. If no one's visiting someone, then no one's going to complain if they die. If people come to visit someone every day, then if we mess up, we don't take care of them properly, someone's going to sue us because someone cares. So therefore, it's of crucial importance to visit people in the hospital. And even if you don't do anything in terms of improving their care, just by visiting them, that shows, that teaches the people in the hospital that someone cares about them, and then they will give them a higher level of, then they will give them a higher level of treatment. So it really could be mamash hatzalas nefashos to visit someone in the hospital, especially if someone's a rabbi and they look chashuv, etc., or you get a Torah note of people, because the more visitors someone has, the better care they get in contemporary hospitals. So this is also very crucial, not that you check if they give them good care, but just by visiting and by inquiring the nurses and talking to the nurses and saying, how's this fellow doing, how's my friend doing, etc., then they see that someone's looking over their shoulders and they're matched to the person more. So that's very important. It could mamash make a difference of pikuach nefesh. Okay, yeah. That's not our problem. Meaning, they can work a little harder too. Halachay, can vakashal of rachamim, imivakash lefun of yochel vakash b'choloshon shiyurtim, vakashal of a fun of loyvakash loshon kodesh. Okay, since the Shekhinah is there, if you're davening in the room with the chole, then you could daven in any language, but if you're davening back home, b'yechidos, you can only daven in Hebrew because the malach and sharis don't understand Aramaic. There's a big machlokus over here between the Prisha and the Shach on the one hand versus the Taz in the Das of the Tor, which side he holds the Machlok Rishonim. Definitely, B'yechidos, you need the Malachim to bring your prayers, you can't use Aramaic. Unless you're either B'tzibur, because the Shekhinah is there, or by the sick person's bedside where the Shekhinah is. You can always doubt it in Hebrew. How about French and German and English? So, that's a big Machlokus, but the Pashup Shad of the Machaber here is very clear, that only Hebrew you can use B'yechidos. You can only doubt it in only Hebrew is okay b'yechidus. Every other language, you need to either have a tzibur or to be at the bedside in order that the Shekhinah should be present. Okay, there's a big debate among the Rishonim in Masechet Shabbos. Is it literally that we need the angels and the angels know some languages and don't know other languages? Is it that we need the angels and they know all languages, but they're mevaze some languages and it's beneath them to carry prayers in that languages? Or is the angels a metaphorical way of talking about your madrega of kavana, of your and purity, of your tefillah, ayin sham, but lemaisa, if you're there, you could daven in any language, and if you're bechidus, then it's better to daven in Hebrew, or at least not in Aramaic.
What side was the shach and the prisha versus the chaz in the Torah?
They were arguing what the Torah held. The Taz says that the Torah said you should dafk use Hebrew, and the Prisha and the Shach says the Torah says you could use anything but Aramaic. But the Mechaber sounds pretty clearly like it's dafk Hebrew, right?
No more than the Torah.
What?
Why more than the Torah?
Fair enough. You're right. Fair enough. Not so passionate. You're right. The Vav, Yechol Sob Shoch Choli Yisrael, very important whenever you're davening with someone, you should include them in all Choli Yisrael, Shiomar Mokam Yachem Alechem Soch Choli Yisrael, which we do for all tefillos, not only for Cholim. Uv'Shabbos Omer Shabbos Yimei Lizok Urefuah Krova Lavo. So on weekdays, you should just say, Mokam Yishat Lecha Urefuah Shleim Soch Shoch Choli Yisrael. And on Shabbos, you should say, Shabbos Yimei Lizok Urefuah Krova Lavo. I'm not going to go into all the debates in the Beis Yosef there. Shach points out that the Mechaber adds some other words in Hilchos Shabbos. However, if you look there at the Ramah, he says, no, we just say what it says here, Shabbos Himilizok Urefuah Krov Lavo. So we stick with what it says here, Shabbos Himilizok Urefuah Krov Lavo. One second. We'll come back to this in a little bit. Zayin, Omer lo shitin daitol in yonav and hilvo hefkedeit zalchirim or chirim hilvo hefkedu etzlo v'al yifach n'leza mayam lavis. If someone's sick but not close to death, we don't tell them to vido yet. That would scare them too much. We do tell them to take care of their ben on l'chaveiro if they they owe someone money, or someone owes them money and they want to tell their kids what their situation is and not to be afraid of death. So it's a balance. On the one hand, we tell them while they're still healthy to take care of their affairs while they have a chance. But on the other hand, at the same time, you can't scare them too much. You have to tell them that that it doesn't mean they're going to die, just in case. You should not visit people with intestinal problems, and the reason the Shach says here is because of embarrassment, because maybe they have diarrhea and they're dirty, or people who have eye disease or head diseases, because the visiting makes it very difficult for them to have a conversation. It puts them in a lot of pain. Likewise, anyone who's sick and is in a lot of pain, and when they talk, it hurts. You don't visit them. You don't actually go in their presence. Okay, nowadays all the Cholmi Ayin are treated differently, and the Choli Ayin and the Choli Rosh, but the principle still applies. If someone is in a state of degradation and would be embarrassed to be seen that way, you shouldn't go into the room. Or if someone would be in a lot of pain and discomfort having to entertain you, then you shouldn't go into the room. Rather, what should you do? So you should go to the outer room, and you can't cheer them up, but you should do the other two things. Sholem Darshim Bo and Srikam Lachavil Rabbis, you should check if he needs any hygiene or additional help. When you hear how bad he is, and you daf. Test.
If someone is unconscious, like, if they would be embarrassed by them using
the
room like that, but right now they're obviously not embarrassed because they don't know you're there.
That's a fascinating question, right? You hear the Kasha. What if they don't know? I'm not sure. That is a great question. What if they're unconscious? And it is like humiliating to see them that way, but they don't realize.
But also, hopefully, that they should never know. That would also be a.
But you're hoping that they wake up.
They're probably like they wake up and someone will tell them, "Oh, you know, someone stopped by while you were unconscious and semi disheveled." Also be the same issue, presumably.
My intuition is not to go inside, just to see from the outside, but it's hard to say for sure.
Doesn't it also depend on your relationship with the person?
No, no, obviously, this all depends on the relationship with the person, obviously. Obviously. Yeah, the I remember when Rav Lichtenstein fell and he broke his hip and he was in the hospital. So I went to the Beis Achitza. I went to the hallway and people who were closer to him went inside. And okay, depends on the relationship.
What did you do in the hallway?
What? I didn't have to remind the hospital that he was chashuv, but I heard that how bad off he was, so I could not.
What about when children visit parents or grandparents if they're sick? Sometimes, like for them, they don't want their kids to see them this way or their grandkids. How does that work?
So you have to use your judgment. Okay, test. Mevakra koli akim tnei darkei shalom is a big chiddush because what did the mechaber leave out here? It's a gemara. What did the mechaber leave out from the gemara? And remember the gemara? What? Im koli shalom. The gemara says that we do biker cholim to the goyim, and here it doesn't mean like yigir toshav and meiri and all that stuff. It means even to like pagans and uncivilized people, etc. Im koli yisrael and kovim koli meisei akim im meisei yisrael and mefarim tnei akim im. So it says, you're mevaker, the goyish sick, with the Jewish sick for darkei shalom. Now the question is that davka or not? Does that mean only if there's like a room with like a goy and a Jew, like you should also say hi to the goy, because otherwise like it'll be obnoxious? Or no, it's lav davka. It doesn't mean it has to be with. It just means just like we visit Jewish sick, we visit goyish sick also. So the shach and the grub both point out, the mechaber is machmir here in darkei shalom, and assumes that it's not im, it's not only if he's mamas lying right next to a Jew. It just means just like we visit Jewish sick, we also visit goyish sick. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, because of darkei shalom, we have to visit goyish sick, even if they're not lying right next to a Jewish sick person. What does that mean? Obviously, it doesn't mean you have to visit every goyish sick person in the world. You don't have to visit every Jewish sick person in the world either. What it means is that when socially appropriate and expected, just like when socially appropriate and expected, we would go do bigger cholim to a Jew, when socially appropriate and expected, we would go do bigger cholim to a guy because of darkei shalom. That's the halacha l'maisa. Okay.
What some of the Jewish organizations that are there to focus on, like it's, as an organization, like, I could see that as an issue of darkei shalom. And like, I was in a hospital this summer. They have like a room. It's like bigger cholim room and like a Hebrew writing how to get into the door.
Right, so, okay, look, you have to use your judgment in these things, but in a chalam, you have to be very careful about darkei shalom. You know, I don't know if a biker cholim room is a pgam in darkei shalom, but what do the goyim probably say? Okay, like, that's the room with, like, where the Jews pray and they keep their holy books and stuff, yeah, which I mean, they do.
It's also stocked with Carlos and Gabby.
Yes, but the goyim probably think Carlos and Gabby's is some ritual thing.
Which it
has become.
Yeah, and generally you can explain it pretty easily as explaining that like, we can't eat the food that you're like,
right.
So then, like,
right. Yeah, I don't think that's a big issue. But like, it's important not to be obnoxious, ignore people just because they're going.
I mean, I have a cousin who's a doctor, and he said the non-Jewish doctors would also hang out in the beautiful living room when they found out what was it, and like, no one kicked them out because they weren't Jewish. Like,
right. Because of darker shalom. Okay. Yud. When it comes to people with intestinal disease, a man cannot be the nurse for a woman, but a woman can be the nurse for a man. Okay, why can't a man be a nurse for a woman? Here we have three perushim right here in the Nosa Kalim. Right, Beis Yosef says because we're afraid that the man will take advantage of the woman. When she's sick and helpless, and he is healthy and strong, he'll take advantage of her. But it's not a problem for the it's not a problem for the woman to nurse the man because A, she's not so strong, and B, the other Mepharshim points out that they don't have the same Yitzhara. Okay, so here he's afraid of a man abusing, taking advantage of the female patient who's helpless. The Bach and the Drisha and the Shach say, no, it's specifically a cholim ayim, when you have to clean them a lot in their private parts. And therefore, since you have to reveal the private parts a lot, there's a special yitzhar hara and chash more than regular diseases. And the Taz says it's special intestinal disease because it's hard for them to move around. And you have to pick them up and move them around a lot and touch their whole body. Okay, so we see from here that that women can nurse a man. That we're not so worried about. But
just on the Taz, like, why is he specifically for no reason, or even for a reason, but for like for derechimo.
That's a fascinating question. It could
be. Like, that seems like a side irrelevant.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. You have to mind what he thinks, what counts as derechiba and what doesn't. Does it depend on your objective act or your
response?
Yeah, it's a good deal. I'm not sure. Anyway, lamaisa, therefore, one has to be careful with men nursing sick women to avoid situations where either the man might abuse the female patient, or he might just have a lot of contact with the private parts, or just have a lot of ongoing physical contact, which could be inappropriate. All right, and we'll leave the rest to the situation. Right. Interestingly, the idea of going to a tzaddik to daven for someone is not like merely a Hasidish idea. It's before the Ramah. Not only that, it's in many places in Chazal and in Tanakh, etc. It's always good to have a tzaddik daven for someone. And likewise, we do a Mishaberich and Shul, because then you have all the tzaddikim and all the other people in Shul also saying Amen and davening for them. The Kol Shem Chadash, and we also change their names. If someone's really sick, we know we do that Adhang Ozek, Yishina Hashem Kore Gzardino, because that's Kore the Gzardin. Agav, there's a big discussion in the poskim. If you change someone's names, they're sick, and they die. What's their name? So the poskim generally write, if you change someone's name because they're sick and then they recover and then they just die later, because everyone dies eventually, then they see the Shino Shame worked. And, you know, in their documents, Shtaros and under Tombstone, you put the new name. If you change someone's sick name when they're sick and then they never recover and they die from that disease, then you see it didn't work and you mevatel the name change, and on their matseva you put the old name. One or two details that are discussed here let's just finish. Nicha Avelin Kolim Bikur Cholim. Nicha Avelin takes precedence over Bikur Cholim, and the svar behind that is, the Kolbo says, because Nicha Avelin is chesed with the dead and the living, while Bikur Cholim is only chesed with the living. Okay, there's a Bach here, quoting the Shach, that I don't fully understand. I don't know if you understood it. He said, well, on the one hand, Nicha Avelin is better because it's chesed for the dead and the living. On the other, Bikur Cholim is better because you might actually save someone's life because you'll daven for them or you'll get them to treat him better. And therefore, okay, how do you negotiate that tension? If you can only do one of them, do Nicham Avelim. But if you can do both, do Bikur Cholim first. I'm not able to understand exactly how he got from point A to point B. If someone else can help me with this far, I'd be very appreciative. I'm not sure exactly. Like, I see his tension. Yeah, on the one hand, Nicham Avelim is better. On the other hand, but why that should lead to the result. I would have said Adraba if it was up to me. Yeah?
Because if he is, does the guy, Nicham Avelim, the guy's already dead. So he coming a little later won't change anything. Bikur Cholim, maybe he'll die, maybe he'll influence right now.
What you're saying is that if he could only do one, better do Chesed with the Mesim and the Chayim. But, because it's not really Pekoch Nefesh to Bikur Cholim. But if you could do them both, Bikur Cholim, the earlier, the better. Well, Bikur Cholim, it's the same whether earlier or better, because you're not changing anyone. You're not helping someone, just making them feel better. Okay, good shot. Thank you for helping me. Okay, so if you can do both, meaning if the question of earlier, Bikur Cholim is more important to do earlier because your relief is suffering. If it's a question of choosing one, Nicham Avelim is better because it helps the Chaim and the Mesim and Bikur Cholim. We assume that he'll manage without it. There is an interesting discussion, and the last thing I want to mention is Simon in the Pesach Chuvas of Cotton Bays. Based on a discussion, when should you make a Mishaber for someone in Shul? When should you not? What if they're not there? Maybe they're dead anyway, and it's not worth like the Pagan and Shabbos and Mishaberich and Shul. According to the Ramah and the Mechaber and the Rishonim and the older Achronim, it seems like they're very, very strict, and you couldn't make a Mishaberich for someone in Shul because it's a bit of a Pagam and Shabbos unless they were mamish and they are still alive and they might die and they might die today. Like it was mamish an emergency. The Magen Avraham already writes that by his days and for sure in later days, the minhag was to make a Mishaberich for everyone in Shul, and nowadays our minhag is to make a Mishaberich for everyone in Shul whether they're Chol She'ish B'Sakana or Ein B'Sakana, whether they might die today or they might die in 3 weeks, and we're knowing to be makel across the board. Why?
This is Shabbos or the week
after? Shabbos. Why? Why are we knowing to be so makel in Shabbos and Mishaberichs for everyone? So the explanation seems to be that since we should say Shabbos Yom Lizak or Fur Kor V'Lavo, that makes it not a real Zaka, And even though we're sorcerer ourselves, we say Hamakom Yirachiv Alav, which is a Zaka. Then we say Shabbos Yimi Lizok, and Shabbos we don't do Zaka. So the minhag is to assume the Shabbos Yimi Lizok overpowers the Hamakom Yirachiv Alav, and we're very makel. The minhag is to be very makel, make mishabers for everyone and their grandmother and Shulon Shabbos. Okay, that's the minhag. I'm not going to argue with it. Shin Lamed Vav Dini Harofe. Okay. Yes. I think that even a male who becomes a nurse can manage to be nizhar from these things. Look, in hospitals nowadays, even though you do have like funny stories in hospitals nowadays, but usually like the nurses can't rape the patients in hospitals. You know, once in a blue moon you read it in the paper. But it's not so shkia, because there's a lot of people running around hospitals and you don't have so much privacy. It's not like the old days when there was one guy in a house and no one else was there. So I'm not, the Beis Yosef, I think, is not such a big problem. How bad having to, like, wipe their private parts all the time? In the hospitals nowadays, a lot of times you don't have to do that. We have more privacy for these things, but, yeah.
It's crazy to say that professionalism is a little bit different now, and the training that goes into it might change.
If all I knew was Shas and Poskin, that wouldn't be crazy to say. But since I also live in the world nowadays, I think that is crazy to say. Yes. Anyway, look, it's definitely a Zahiras. You know, if someone wants to say that nowadays in our modern medicine, we can avoid most of these shashos, yesh amal lismoch, but it's definitely a significant question mark. Definitely a significant question mark.
One question.
So the Gemara says, when cut and daf test, that if you're learning Torah and there's a mitzvah to do, if there's enough other people to do it and they don't need you, you should keep learning. If they need you to do it, then you should go. So what does that mean for Bikur Cholim or Nichum Avelim? So if your presence is not really necessary because there's lots of other people and you're not so close, then keep learning. If, you don't have to be like Mother Teresa and go to every Nichum Avelim and Bikur Cholim if you're learning. But if, let's say, they talk about not enough people, or there are enough people, but your presence would be missed, then you should go do the mitzvah.
I mean, same with the coins and with the roofing. Not everybody is able to be get a zocha to have a refuah from this person as well as that person. It's also in terms of your tefillos. Like, even if you, like, it is the yeshua, so
that it is. Yeah, but I hear the taina, but I'm...
you're close to that, you will feel...
Okay, if you're close to someone, then, you should go. But, I don't think we go that far, because then ain't the devil self. Everyone should always go visit everyone, because...
I know, but you might not actually feel the need to
dog. Right. Okay, so you have to use your judgment. Shin Lam Vav, quickly, Dine Rofe. Nas Nator Roshos the Rofe Lerapos, Mitzvah Hiu Bechlau, Pikuach Nefesh. Okay, being a doctor is included in Pikuach Nefesh. The Chiddush is, even though, Hashem runs the world, and ultimately, every good doctor, there's one thing every good doctor knows, it's that it's not up to him whether the patient lives or dies. It's up to Hashem. The doctors probably know that better than us, because we might be stupid and think, oh yeah, the doctors do their job and they save everyone. And if they don't do their job, the guy dies. But the doctors know that as much as they do their job, it's merely statistics. And if they don't do their job, it's also statistics. Okay, so you might think that it's not a big deal. No, that we say that's including Pikuach Nefesh, that we have to do our shtadlus. I'm not going into all the philosophy now. But, says the Taz, he points out, based on the discussion of the Ramban, based on, I think, the proper understanding of the Ramban, in the beginning of the Chukosai, why does it start with Rishus and then turn into mitzvah in, within the space of a few words? He says, according to some philosophers, this is Machlokas, Rambam and Ramban, but according to some philosophers, such as Ramban, then ideally we should not have Derech work through Derech HaTeva and do Ishtadlus. We should be purely just everything between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam without the Teva intervening, without using the Teva. Ideally, we shouldn't use the Teva. Therefore, it's only a Rishus. It's not a requirement. It's only optional that we're in the Madrega of Teva. However, nowadays, we don't really have a choice in the matter. Nowadays, we are, right, this is fundamentally different, right? There are three basic mahalachim in Judaism. There is a Rambam Udi Imei mahalach that you always have to work through the Teva and see the Yad Hashem through the Teva. There is the Navardikers who say, you should always just have bitachon and ignore the Teva and Hashem will come through for you. And then in between, there's the Ramban, who the Taz is quoting, who says, no, if you're on a super high madrega, then you should ignore Teva and everything just comes straight from the Ribbono Shel Olam to you with no screens in between. However, on our Loma Drago, we have to work through Tefa. You can't just decide. You can't just be in a Vardiker and say, I decided I'm higher than Tefa, and then Hashem's going to do miracles for me. No, no, no. On our Madrega, we have to work through Tefa. And that's the Taz here saying from the Ramban, that in some ideal sense, comparing us to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu or the days of Melech HaMashiach or etc., you know, it's really a bidyevet that we work through Derech HaTeva and have doctors. But given that we live in our time and we're not, don't live in Yemos HaMashiach, therefore it is, and we're not in Madriga to be Lamalim and HaTeva. And if we pretend we're Lamalim and HaTeva, we're just going to die, Chas V'Shalom, because we're not in that Madriga. Therefore, it's a big mitzvah in our Madriga to do the most Ishtadlus with Derech HaTeva we can. And therefore, it's important to be a doctor, or for the doctors to do their job. That's what he's asking. If the doctor refuses to treat his patient, then he's a murderer. And even if, what if the doctor says there's another doctor? No. Shalom alakol am zochel israpo. Similar to Talmud Torah, right? You can't just say there's another yeshiva. You never know what yeshiva you'll succeed in. Likewise, when it comes to doctors, you never know what doctors. The doctor can't say, I'm not going to heal you because there's another doctor. The doctor has to try to heal everyone who comes to him because you never know. Maybe you're Hashem Shliach and he needs your expertise. However, there's two requirements. He has to be licensed, expert, and lo yehi sham gadol imenu. This is a tough one for doctors as well as all the rest of us, no matter what our profession is. If there's really a bigger expert, now what does it mean? There's a bigger expert, but the patient has no access to him. That's called there's no bigger expert. But if there really is a bigger expert who could deal with this patient, and now, it doesn't mean every doctor should say, there's a bigger expert, I won't treat anyone, because that's ridiculous. He can't send all his patients to the bigger expert, because the expert doesn't have time. But a doctor has to be honest with himself, not to be a balgaiva, and say, look, one out of every 50 patients I could squeeze into this bigger expert. So therefore, since I can, and they need his expertise, because they're tough cases, I shouldn't be a balgaiva, and I should send him to this expert. Because you're only allowed to be a doctor if you're licensed, and if you're a bucky, we'll see later on that means licensed, and if there's not a bigger expert available and appropriate. Shimlokar is a shofech damim, and if you are a doctor who doesn't know what he's doing, or you should send to an expert and you don't, then you're a murderer. Being reveshal versus bezdin chayv tashlumim, if Vishus Bezin means technical license. If you're an unlicensed doctor and you do anything wrong, you have to pay. A filo and bucky, even if you're an expert, because don't have a license. It's not just bureaucracy to have a license. It's halacha to have a license. The emri paper says bezim v'tavi he's a potter the under b'chayv din shemayim heimis v'nodal shoyu gol yado. However, if you are a licensed, an expert licensed doctor, the achronim point out that every licensed doctor is an expert because they wouldn't give you a license if you didn't pass your boards. Therefore, if you make a mistake. Not if something bad happens, meaning you're only a human being. Of course, X percentage of your patients, this therapy won't work and they'll die. That's not called a mistake. That's not the doctor Nachai B'dinya Shemayim. Let's say there's something that's 60% of the time this therapy works and 30% of the time that therapy works. And he picked the 60% therapy and it didn't work. It's not a mistake. That's just the fact that he's only a human being and he's not in control of the world. It doesn't mean if it didn't work. And that's what nowadays in America, they think you sue the doctor for malpractice whenever it didn't work. No, it's not a mistake whenever what the doctor does doesn't work. Statistically, not everything works all the time. It's only a mistake if the doctor should have done X and chose to do Y instead for no good reason. Then that's a mistake. And then, bidei shamayim, he's chayv to pay for damages or go into galus if he chas v'shalom killed someone. However, the Nosei Kalim point out, and I'm not getting into the philosophy of this right now, that the Shach says, however, the doctor shouldn't say, I'm going to retire. I made enough money, I'm going to retire now because I don't want this chiyuv. The assumption is that the doctor, if it's not brought to the doctor's attention that he made a mistake, then he's not in trouble up in Shemayim. And if it's brought to his attention, then he should just try to deal with it in the most appropriate way possible, and he'll also be clear in Shemayim. So don't worry, it's still a mitzvah to be a doctor. Don't be afraid. Base. This is something which is very tricky for doctors nowadays. Harofe aser litol schara chachma valimud. A rofe is not allowed to charge money. Now for what? He's not allowed to charge money for his chachma, meaning for his training. Valimud. Limud doesn't mean his learning. That's the same as his chachma. Limud means for telling you what to do, for giving you a diagnosis. He's not allowed to charge money for limud or for chachma, not for his expertise, and not for explaining to you what you need to do, because that's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to heal someone. It's hashavas aveda, because if you have to return someone's property, you certainly have to return their health. that didn't convince you, maybe shouldn't convince you, it's a drusha. Vashi voso low. In the redarshan, to mean you should return himself to himself, meaning you should return the person's own health to himself. Therefore, you're not allowed to charge money for a mitzvah. Skar torch, batala mutter. But like all mitzvahs, for just the tircha and the batala, it's mutter, meaning just the fact that he might have had to work hard to schlep something, then he can charge for the same as a day laborer would charge. Right? So if you hire a Mexican day laborer on Coney Island Avenue or wherever, you know, you pay them a certain amount for tircha, the doctor can charge that much. Or batala. Or if he has another job and he has to take time off his other job to heal you, then he can charge you skar batala, the same as for all mitzvahs. However, for actually doing the healing, he's not allowed to charge. Okay, this is a very nice ideal. I'm not aware of any Orthodox Jewish or other doctors nowadays who are machped on this, who don't charge.
Couldn't skar batala be understood as, had I gone into a different profession, I would have gone into investment banking with all...
Yeah, so that's the trick all the rabbis use, right? If I'm smart enough to give a Gemara shiur to be a Ram, then imagine how much money I would have made in investment banking. And therefore, my skar batala is $200,000 a year. Probably $500,000 a year, you know? So that's a stretch. The simple shot is no. Skar batala only miatala demuchach, like that's actually physically there. So you could ask, why are all doctors bankable nowadays? So you could say they could have been investment bankers. The two answers I've seen in the poskim are the Igros Moshe says, because nowadays it's so hard, it's so much work to go to medical school that no one would become a doctor if they couldn't charge. Therefore, as a since nowadays no one would go to medical school if they couldn't charge, therefore, we let the doctors charge because otherwise we'd be in trouble. And it's the lesser of two evils, right? So we let the doctors charge because now otherwise there'd be no doctors nowadays. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted as saying a different fart, a very clever fart. He says, there's a lot of goyim in the world. What are there, 20 million Jews? There's like 8 billion goyim, right? Says every doctor, how many Jewish doctors are there? I have no idea. But every Jewish doctor probably has a million goyim for him someplace in the world. And therefore he says, you can always treat goyim, and you're allowed to charge the goyim. And therefore, skar batala, whatever you would have charged the goyish patient, you can charge your Jewish patient to the skar batala. You could have made money with the goyish patient, and he's wasting your time from making money off goyish patients. And therefore, you're allowed to charge skar batala, and you can charge the Jews. Okay, whether it's because of Rav Moshe, because just nowadays, that's a necessary takana, or whether it's because of Shlomo Zalman, because you could have charged your goyish patients, or whether you expand skar batala and say you could have been an investment banker. Lamaisa, nowadays the minhag is that doctors charge money.
Is the Shlomo Zalman about saying that's what the Shulchan Aruch meant, or that's a limud supposed to say?
It could be that's even what the Shulchan Aruch meant. I mean, if once upon a time, let's say the Jews didn't, I don't know when this happened, but the Jews didn't live near any goyim, who would want to go to them, then that wouldn't work. But since Jews started living in places where there were goyim who would go to them, then it works. I mean, you're right, at one point in time, maybe Jews at a certain time and place lived in a society where goyim wouldn't go to Jewish doctors. Then it wouldn't work. I don't know what it was like in the Machaber's time. But nowadays, it is true. Every goyim would go to a Jewish doctor, I think. I don't know, maybe a few weirdos out there, but I think in America, every goyim would go to a Jewish doctor. And in Israel, every goyim would go to a Jewish doctor. So therefore, you can have skar batala. Okay, gimel. Gimel is really a lot of choshen mishpat, which we're not going to go into now. Mishesh lo samanim v'chaver chol v'tzorich lahem asur lo lahalos v'neim yosur min aroi. This is called, what's this word for this? Something very bad. Gouging, right? Price gouging. Someone who has medicine and his fellow is sick and needs them, you're not allowed to charge more than they're worth. Now, of course, the question is what they're worth, right? I'm not getting into drug price policy now. But clearly, this is not only true of refuah. Anything someone's desperate for, if someone's stuck and desperate for something, you're not allowed to charge more than the market value because they're desperate, because that is obviously Onah taking advantage.
By saying more than the market value, wouldn't that depend on the need and demand of the other? Meaning, if there's...
Correct. That's what's tricky. I mean, now that we live in the free market, capitalistic economies, wouldn't the market take this into account? But the answer is no, because let's say someone needs something in a certain time and place, and the market value is less than that, but you happen to be in the right time and the right place, and you could take advantage. Right? Like the case of the Gemara, right? I'm chasing Mati with a gun. and a cab passes by. He gets into the cab to escape from me because I'm on foot and save his life. So we know how much the cab is worth. There's like a meter, whatever. But since right now the cab can take advantage, therefore charges him $500. So that's similar here. This drug might sell in the drugstore for $100, but right now the drugstore is closed and you have 10 minutes before you die, and therefore I charge you $10,000. So that is usser. I mean, hopefully we should all know that's usser. The rule is that even if this comes from the case of the cab in the Gemara, there's a ferry, even if he agrees, contractually agrees to pay you because he's desperate and you're taking advantage, he doesn't have to pay. It's not binding. However, the Achronim say in the, where did the Achronim say this? Someone says this, that Rekiva Eger says that if you already paid him, you can't get a refund. Okay, so when it comes to ripping someone off, it's usher to rip someone off, and if they agree to pay, they don't have to pay, although if they already paid, then they're stuck. However, if the doctor charges a lot for his expertise, then you do have to pay. Then you do have to pay that price. Why? Because it's a fair market price. Because, you know, the expertise of a doctor really is priceless, and there's no market value. Like, every doctor is different. And you know, how do you, and his expertise is worth a lot of money. And even though it's a mitzvah, and the doctor's supposed to do it for free, principle is, even a mitzvah someone's supposed to do for free, if they demand money for it, and they say, look, go to someone else if you want me to do it. You have to pay me, then if you pay them, they keep the money. And even if you didn't pay them yet, if you agreed to pay them, you have to pay your debt. Okay. Shin Lam Zayin Cholash Meshlo Mace. Cholash Meshlo Mace. Ain Modino So, Shem Ditar, Daito Love, In Kurin Chaluka, In Bochim, In Maspidim Funim, Shalish Shabar, Libo, Mashtikas, Menachem, Mil Funim. A Chola whose relative died, you don't tell him. Basically, if bad news happens and someone's sick, I don't mean someone's sick like they have a flu. Someone's like deathly ill. Then you don't tell them. Why? Because maybe, Ditar, Daito Love, maybe they will lose their composure, and maybe they will just, they'll lose it, and they'll give up on life, and they'll die. Because we know there's a mind-body connection, and if someone is feeling hopeless, then they're more likely to die. And therefore, you hide the bad news from them. The aim, Korin, now nowadays, okay, all these things, you have to figure out how to apply nowadays, because we live in a world with much more communication, etc. So you have to use your judgment. If someone's going to find out anyway, then it's not necessarily productive to hide it from them. But if someone's really not going to find out anyway, and it's really just going to hurt their condition, then even though the modern world thinks everyone's autonomous and should be given all the information, etc., but the halacha tells us that that no, it's okay to be a little paternalistic, especially if you're trying to preserve or save someone's life, and you should hide the bad news from them. So you have to use your judgment nowadays. You know, if you're going to unsuccessfully hide the bad news, it's not worth it. If you can successfully hide the bad news, then it is worth it.
If you have two ill parents,
yes, that's mefurish in the Achronim. Not on this staff, but I've seen it mefurish in the Achronim. Yes, that if someone's chashon, their mother died, and their father's so ill, and they don't want their father to know, they can even shave when they go into their father for pikuach nefesh, so as not to upset the father and make him lose his equilibrium, his mental equilibrium. Yes.
Don't they say that by Yashiv, that they didn't tell him his daughter died?
Something like that. Yeah. There was a maisa. I forget exactly how. Now, so we don't tell him, and we don't tear his garment, and we don't cry or eulogize in front of him, so that we don't break his spirit. And all those people who wanted to be Menachem, we make them be quiet in front of him. So here it's a bit of a question. The Shach and the Bach deal with, what's the Chiddush? You don't even tell him someone dies, and of course you don't do these things. So there are two main answers. One answer is that it means even if he found out, you still don't cry and do kriya, etc., because you don't want to emphasize it more than necessary. That's one pshat. And the second pshat is, this doesn't help for Koran Chalukah, but for the other things, even if someone unrelated dies, you don't eulogize and cry in front of him, because still, you don't want him to think about people dying, and then it will depress him. Okay, so all of those are true. You obviously have to use your judgment, but you shouldn't tell him, and if he finds out, you shouldn't emphasize the avelos if it's going to make him lose equilibrium. Obviously, you have to use your judgment and know his psychological state and what the effect will have on him, and you shouldn't talk about people dying, even if they're not his relatives. Shen Lamed Ches. v'deyachole v'keitzad omrim lo. Right, this is also something very shy for rabbis. Rabbis are often called in to sit with people at their last moments. Aleph, not a lomos. If someone is close to dying, omrim lo hisvadi, we tell them to do vidoy. Omrim lo harbi hisvadi v'lo mesu, v'harbi shlo hisvadi mesu, v'zchashat hisvadi ata chai. So, very important. This is a tricky one. On the one hand, we want to tell him do vidoy, so he'll die and go to Gan Eden, not to Gehenna. On the other hand, if you tell him do vidoy, he might get depressed, and then it'll cause him to die, because he'll say, they gave up on me, I'm hopeless. Therefore, we try to balance it by telling him do vidoy, and tell him, you should know, a lot of people did vidoy and survived, a lot of people didn't say vidoy and died, and you know what, maybe if you do vidoy, then you'll get zechuyas and you'll live. And that way, we inspire him. The chol misvadi yishol chel gom haben. Whoever says vidoy has a chelek le olam haba, and therefore it's very inspiring that, you know, whatever someone did wrong, it's never too late, right? From a physical perspective, if someone's dying in the hospital, it's too late for them to do anything of significance. But from a spiritual perspective, even if someone's dying in the hospital on their last breath, they can do things of more significance than their whole life. They can advance their whole life. They can do tshuva and get a chelek in olam haba. If he can't talk, he should think. He should be mizvad in his thought. And if he doesn't know how to say vidoy in detail, the minimum vidoy is, he's just saying, my death should be kapara for all my sins. You shouldn't tell in front of Amaratzim, Nashim, and Ketanim, or whoever would act this way, because they might say, oh, he's saying vidoy, he's dying, and they'll cry, and then they will break his spirit, and they'll actually be a self-fulfilling prophecy and cause him to die, and that will be pikoch nefesh. Say do vidoy shchiv mira. What should he say? Remember, it's not folks in Yuma what the order is. This is the order we do in our machzor and etc. Chet avon and pesha. Vanechus same chelk be on edim zakin lom haba tzofon letzadikim. Vim rotz laharach vidu yom kippur. It's just beyond. If you want to say the whole thing from Yom Kippur, that is okay. And the gra here says, it's more than okay. He says, Kantov Lassos. It's okay for anyone to do a big vidoy. It's never usher for anyone to do as much vidoy as they want. But if someone's dying, it's not just okay. It's Tov Lassos, and therefore the ideal is to say the whole vidoy of Yom Kippur. Again, if someone is capable of it, you have to know if they just have enough composure and enough Jewish knowledge and Hebrew skills to understand this. Lemaisa, if you look, I'll see you at some page maybe a little later when we go through the Madrich at the different versions of Vidoy, but most of the Madrichim have, like, they have like a little Yerotzim you say first, and then after you say Shema, Yisrael, Hashem Elokim, and then they, if you have more time, they say the whole Shema with the with Emes V'Yatziv, and they say the Vidu of Yom Kippur, and then if they have more time, there's Tehillim they say, etc. Okay, I'll Zerux and give it out when I Zerux and give out some other pages. Okay, it's basically it. There's some discussion of Shach here, but it's not so Lemaisa. Yeah. If the chol is unconscious, what can you do? So the truth is, what you can do is, let's say the chol can't speak, you could say the vidoy and have them listen. What if the chol is unconscious? They can't really listen. So, lani is daiti, even if the chol seems to be unconscious, you know, perhaps they might be conscious. It's hard to tell, so there might be value. I mean, maybe sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't, I don't know. Definitely could be value if they might be conscious and saying the Vidur for them and saying Shema with them and having them listen. If they're really unconscious, then, you know, then it's hard to imagine that there's value. It's always good for me to say Vidur. Yeah, everyone should say Vidur, but it's hard to imagine there's value for them. But often, you know, you're not 100% sure if they're listening or not, so then there'd be value to it. And even if I'm sure that they're unconscious, but the family's not sure, thinks they might be listening, there'd be value for the family in thinking that they said vidoy with their loved one before he passed away.
Going back to Siv Aleph.
Yeah.
If people are there who don't fall into the category of Shabbat, but we still think they're going to, like, you know, cry a lot and be depressing, should we?
We should kick them out. Yeah, we should kick them out. You know, nowadays, you know, I will just point out The shach does he have here is a discussion about a strange bach. He wonders why you don't say this when they're sick. You only say this when they're close to dying. Why do you only say this when they're close to dying? So he says, you know, okay, well, number one, because you don't want to do it too early because you don't want to break their spirit. And number two, because you know, if they're not close to dying yet, they always have more time later. Meaning, number one, you don't want them to think they're close to dying when they're not, because if you say vijay, they'll say, I must be close to dying, and they're not. And number two, you know, you always want to wait for the last minute in order not to depress them earlier than necessary. Okay, one thing I'll just point out, I said we're going to stop and keep the schedule. I have to keep the schedule being before we're kula. But I just want to hand out this great article now. The next one is Dine Goses. The basic principle of Goses is that a Goses, someone who's close to dying, you cannot do anything that will hasten their death. And I think one thing that is worth pointing out, and you know, maybe hopefully Rav Effel will give a guest share, if you hand this out, it's a great Wall Street Journal article, is that in hospitals nowadays, whatever the halakhas are of end-of-life issues, hospitals nowadays, unfortunately in America at least, you know, are very eager to get rid of people. They're very eager to pull the plug on people. You know, sometimes we understand where they're coming from, sometimes even from a secular perspective, you know, they're a little too, they're being a little bloodthirsty. There's just this great article from the Wall Street Journal, 2006, How Faith Saved the Atheist, put it in your files. This non-from-Jewish reporter, her father was in the hospital after a very serious injury. He was old, and the family didn't think he was so bad off, but the doctors kept saying, you know, it's time to let him die with dignity and stop butchering him. Can we let him die with dignity? That was their phrase. They kept saying, let him die with dignity. And the family just felt like, no, like, maybe he would live. Like, you know, they're just trying to get rid of him because he cost a lot of money and he bothered, you know, and it's a big tircha and they want to free up the bed for someone else. And she didn't know what to do until she finally had this einfall. And she came into the hospital the next day and said, we're Orthodox Jews. And our rabbi said that we're not allowed to do anything to hasten the death or to stop treatment, etc. And she said, from that moment on, it's like a force field protected them. Like all the people in the hospital said, oh, they're Orthodox Jews, they're not going to listen to us. It's their religion, so they stopped bothering them. And in the end, they came the next day, and her father was like sitting up doing the New York Times crossword and went home and felt better and lived longer. And they said his life was saved by the wisdom of the halacha. So in the end, she writes, this is not a NCSY kunzitz. I did not become firm afterwards. She writes in the Wall Street Journal. But I did appreciate that, you know what, those old-fashioned religious people understand some things better than us modern people. So it definitely is a big yesod that nowadays perhaps medicine has swung a little too much in the direction of, you know, wanting people to die, quote-unquote, with dignity, or just wanting people not to drain resources and not to be a burden. And you have to be very, a rabbi, one of the jobs of a rabbi is you have to be very, very strong in not just in counseling families what to do, but in being able to stand up to people with a very different hashkafa, and that's getting, I think, worse by the year nowadays. I mean, every year, you know, they're like killing old and sick people a little more than they did the previous year. And it's pikuach nefesh mamish and a very important battle for us to be fighting whenever it comes up or we're involved in it, etc. Okay, save this for your files. It's just a great story. And we'll go into the nitty-gritty of the halacha, Mirtz Hashem, next time. Right, so if you notice, I split. Yeah. So, okay, well, we're going to try to finish it by the end of Zman. So,